You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio is Kevin Wooster. He writes a blog, On the Other Hand, and you can find that at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin, thanks for coming in.
It's so good to be here officially. It's a little bit different to be in studio rather than in my den, in my, you know, cutoffs.
And sitting with your feet up,
sitting
right?
Sitting with my feet up, the dog, you
sipping
know, wanting a treat, sipping
yeah.
my tea.
Yeah, there
so
you
I
go.
Feel like I'm a real radio person.
There
here.
You go.
Right
you got
now.
The headphones on,
yeah,
you're ready to go.
Headphones.
So I'm kind of struck by the first line of your blog that it was your anniversary and your
yeah.
wife said he's out fishing with another woman.
Yeah, I was. What are you going to do? I mean, temptations. But
the other woman was.
Know, it was Lori Walsh. So, you know, that takes a little bit of the sting out of it. And then as I added in the thing, as you know, there were other people there. So
right.
As there were two 70-something twin brothers along who said they were great chaperones so and fishing guides.
Right. Yeah, I spoke with Lori earlier this morning. She had a medical condition, and so she has had to cancel the rest of her week yep. here. So we're filling in and doing the best that we can. I said, you really went fishing? I said, and she said she did. So
she
how did.
Did
she really do?
And I would tell you that I don't think she's the first person who's gone fishing with me and ended up not feeling well a day after that. So maybe it's some of the thing. But, you know, we were out on Belfouche Reservoir, and it was hot, and it was sunny, and we were out there a long time. And so maybe that was it. But we had a great time. And Lori, who had never fished for walleyes, and you know, the goal there, and it's always a dicey thing when you aim to get somebody a fish.
Mm-hmm.
It almost never works that way.
Right.
You know, because
right.
you just can't do
You're
that.
You're just teasing them that it really happens.
Yeah. And yeah. so we were out there, and the Mays boys, the twin brothers, the only way you tell them apart is one mustache. So Larry and Terry, and they were committed to it. So when Terry caught a fish right away and gave the reel to Lori, so we knew at least she'd feel what it was like to reel in a walleye.
Okay.
And about 4 minutes after that, she said something, I think I've got something going on here. Well, she caught a very nice walleye, and then she caught another nice walleye as I watched, and then Terry caught one, and Larry caught one, and then she caught one, and I caught a branch, and then one of the other brothers caught one, and I think Lori caught one, and I caught another branch, and by the end of the day, I caught three branches and no walleye, and Lori had either three or four walleyes, I can't remember, but I think maybe four.
And so, were you able to keep any?
Yes, there's a slot limit.
Yeah.
The walleye's between 15 and 18 up there. Yeah. Different management priorities for different lakes from Game Fish and Parks. So we caught some fish, a number of fish in the slot, so we had to return those. But she caught one over 18 inches, so she kept that. And Terry caught one over 18, or Larry did, and they kept that. And they cleaned the fish and gave them to us. So Lori took home some walleye, and so did I. I didn't take home the stick. And we had a great day. It was fun.
Are you sure it wasn't the same stick over
well,
and over? Did you throw
you know,
that back?
That was brought up. But I was looking. They were fighters, all three of them.
And your wife was okay that you spent your anniversary doing what you do?
As I describe it in the blog, I somehow managed to know I was doing both those things on the same day and plan for those, and not until the night before realize this is not going to work out very well. And she's seen that from me before, and often involving fishing.
Right.
So she was understanding. It was a Monday, so we can, you know, it's not like it was a big day we had planned. She had to work and things. So we will celebrate properly, and she loves walleye. So I did give her that sort of anniversary present when I got home.
Okay. Now, you also have other blogs that we really haven't talked about.
Yes.
On this program, and you were part of Monday's conversation as well.
Yes.
Yeah, so go ahead and set that up for me.
Well, my friend Sam Hurst, an elitist intellectual snob from the West Coast. No, I'm joking, Sam. I only thought that for a while. He's a really sharp guy and a former network news producer, and did some buffalo ranching for a while. He was drawn to this country by the plains and the buffalo and things, and has come to love this place. He's been here, I don't know, I think 25 years or something total. And he's writing a book. He'd written a book on Earl Brockley, the guy that started Reptile Gardens, which is a delightful book. And he came up with an idea about a book on the 100th Meridian. And he decided he was going to live in an old line shack on land owned by a friend of ours, Nick Nemec, Nick and Mary Jo Nemec over by Holabird, for off and on for a year and write this book about life on the 100th meridian, this defining point between the farm country and the ranch country, how it was settled, how people today exist there, and what it's all about. So, and he labeled me a child of the 100 because I grew up on a farm just east of the 100th meridian. So.
Okay. And did you know that growing up?
I did not.
I
didn't know I was a child of the 100 until the guy from California told me I was. So I had to give that to him. And it really all comes together now when I see the way he defines it and the way he looks on the historical significance of it. Because he provides an interesting perspective as an outsider who's now an insider. And in some ways, more of an insider than I am, because I've never lived in a line shack out on the 100th in the winter, in the spring, in the summer. And line shacks, for those who don't know, and there's some historical question of whether it was an actual line shack, but those are the shacks that were on fence lines, and cowboys would live in them to take care of the fence. And also, sometimes they wouldn't be on a fence, but they'd be out far from the ranch place so you could tend cattle and stay out there overnight. So he's had some remarkable experiences, but also he's come to know the people along that 100th, because he goes 2 or 3 degrees east or west, 100, 150 miles north or south of the shack. And I think he's doing a phenomenal job of reporting for this book. So I'm excited about it.
And how does it make you look at the land growing up differently?
Well, he identifies things that I knew but didn't say, or knew that but didn't acknowledge specifically. And I think that's been useful. And he also reminds me of things as he looks at that landscape, which you could say is drive-through landscape. You know, some people think, oh my gosh, I got to go all the way from Sioux Falls to Rapid. That's going to be brutal. I love that drive because that drives through my heartland. That drives through the place that made me who I am, for good or bad. And so Sam identifies that in really creative and elegant ways in his writing, I think. And it reminds me of the times when Highway 16 funneled all the people, east and west travelers, through Chamberlain, Reliance, Presho, Kennebec. And we would talk to them, and they would all ask, as I say in one of my blogs, and they would kind of frantically, desperately ask, how far till Rapid City?
When will I get there?
Yeah, when do I have to stop? Because as Sam says, you can't drive through and appreciate this. You can drive by mountains and go, wow. You don't drive by the 100th meridian or through the 100th meridian and go, wow. You have to stop and let the place create its impression on you. And, you know, I knew that growing up, but he said it for me in ways that were really, to me, important.
And how should people be impressed?
Well, the grasslands, the soil as it is composed and what it produces in a variety of native plant species. But again, you have to stop and get to know it personally. They don't mean much driving by. They all look the same. And there's a great deal of difference there. As Sam said, you might stop at the Fort Pierre National Grasslands, walk over a hill, and at the right time of the year run into a prairie chicken lek with dancing, booming, you know, prairie chickens doing their spring courtship rituals. And that'll be full of life. There may be a coyote involved trying to eat one. There may be, as I've stayed in tents overnight and woke up in the middle of, awakened in the middle of those dancing things, and it's an amazing, beautiful thing. You drive by, you don't see any of it.
You don't see it.
Yeah.
Should there be more of a tourist opportunity there?
That's a good question. How do you present that to people? I mean, right now the Fort Pierre National Grasslands office has, for example, viewing blinds so that you can schedule those during the spring mating season for sharp-tailed grouse and for prairie chickens. And you can go out in these wooden blinds and sit and watch this all happen. But the Black Hills are an easy place to promote and an easy place to understand. It takes more work, as Sam explains in the book, I think in really important ways. And I think it also helps us understand the value of that place and why it should be protected as much as the Black Hills. You know, it's that important. Yeah.
And as you come back and you're now living in the Black Hills, what did you bring with you from growing up there?
Well, I brought a definite need and desire to see a sunrise and a sunset. Mm. And I get a little claustrophobic up in the hills. I sometimes, one of the things I like about the mountain pine beetle is it killed a lot of pine trees.
So you can now see.
And I really like a more open landscape. I want forest, obviously. But now we're going to have more aspen, more birch, more diversity of wildlife, more, you know, of everything that used to be here when Custer came through. And And I miss seeing, I live at the base, kind of at the foothills here in town over in the West Boulevard district. So I get to see some sunrise, but especially in the winter, I lose the sun at about 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of hard for me, because when you grew up where I grew up, you're used to seeing it flat that way and flat that way.
Mm-hmm.
And also nothing sneaks up on you out there.
Right.
You know, you can see storms and everything else coming for miles. It took me a long time out here to figure weather out. I still don't have it figured out because it catches you off guard all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And did you learn anything about your neighbors that Sam has brought to you?
I think so. And I, you know, I got kind of tentative and a little emotional on that, because on the broadcast the other day, Sam and I drove out and looked at the farm that I grew up on and the one that we sold after my dad died a few years. And it's changed. Almost all of the native grass it had is gone and is now in production agriculture. And that was a sad thing for me. And yet, I don't want to be too critical, because the people that did are living with realities I don't have to live with financially, and maybe have a different land use ethic or philosophy. And they're good people, good farmers. But I think through Sam's book and through the reporting he's done, especially, because that's the important thing. I mean, he's a phenomenally detailed and careful reporter. So he's brought in a great deal of information, much of which he's shared with me. And I have to admit that Sam Hurst is telling me things about my home that I didn't
really. That you never knew.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
And I'm trying not to resent him for it.
Does it make you want to be a different kind of reporter now in your retirement?
You know, it's interesting. Sam and I talk about that. I spent 35 or 40 years as a reporter. I still do some reporting, but not everyday stuff. Finding shortcuts. Mm-hmm. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a crunch. How can I get this story put together with the least amount of research or reporting possible? It's just a reality of what we deal with. And watching Sam, and what I'm doing, what I get to do on my blog, is let things evolve a little more, because I have time and you guys give me the space online to do it, maybe too much sometime. And watching Sam teaches me more about that, because, oh my goodness, he's an organized, hardworking, constructed reporter. And it's a process. The book is going to be well worth reading.
Okay. Kevin Wooster, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. Kevin has a blog. On the other hand, you can find that at sdpb.org/Wooster.